Beer Talk. Gespräche über und beim Bier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast Beer Talk. Today we make quite a travel. We go to the very south of Africa, to South Africa, close to Pretoria, and we visit a filmmaker, but also a brewer, and someone who has a very interesting offer for you. You can come to a screening and really see and have it live how sorghum beer is made. So welcome, Obakeng Malopi. It's very great to have you here. And maybe you talk a little bit about yourself to our listeners.
Good day. Thank you so much, Marcus. Nice being to be here. I've been wanting to be part of this podcast. I'm Obakeng Malopi. I live in South Africa. I'm a filmmaker and a beer brewer. So my journey, how it started, I'm an award-winning filmmaker. I made my name in the film industry. And in the film industry, when you have a film, you get to travel and go to film festivals. So I've traveled all around Europe, the UK. I've been to France twice, the UK twice, and Switzerland, Canada, and also the Netherlands. So the interesting thing about traveling is that you get to see the local community. You get to see how beer is it's been consumed and it's been made. So I will tell you that my first interaction with beer is the UK, the United Kingdom. Is the first time, that's the first time I saw women openly drinking. They were drinking mainstream beer. It's like I haven't seen that in my village, whereby a lot of women, they drinking beer. So it gave me a motivation that, you know what, I can do this. It's not taboo. This is not something that's taboo for a woman to be talking about beer and drinking beer. In the Netherlands, I saw also a beer culture there, but they're more related to us, you know, the food, the culture there, and the food also in the French. That's also what inspired me, you know, the beer and food pairing. So after it came to a period whereby we had COVID, that's during the lockdown. So I've always had an interest in beer. I used to watch films on YouTube on how beer is made, and seeing the German guys, you know, with the beard and a big glass of beer, you know, drinking beer. And it used to be so interesting, the foam of the beer, the head, the carbonization, everything used to be so interesting. So there was an advert on YouTube, not on YouTube, on Facebook, whereby there was a Road to 100 Cicerone certificate program. It was by a lady called Eugenia Brown from United States. She was taking 100 women of color and teaching them how to brew beer, Cicerone tasting, beer and food pairing, smelling beer, and everything that you need to know about beer. After the whole school and the learning, then in South Africa, I joined a school called the Brewster's Brewing Program, whereby I learned how to make beer. And also to increase my knowledge when it comes to beer, I used to go to breweries and brew with them, volunteer. And you know, Marcus, the nice part about going to breweries is you get to taste the beer. You can open the tap and just drink the beer. So that was my first interaction with beer.
Fantastic. And you grew up in South Africa in the village you are now, or somewhere else?
So right now I'm in the village, right? I'm shooting my second film, but I live in Joburg. So most of the breweries here in South Africa, they're in Joburg and Cape Town also. So I moved to the brewery to shoot my second film because people liked my first film.
Did you grow up in Jericho, or where did you grow up?
Yes, I grew up in Jericho. I was born here. I grew up here. Yes, that's true.
And when you grew up, can you remember of people making beer, people brewing?
So the interesting thing about here in the village, we're still very rural, we're still very cultural. So children were not allowed to go to the bar or the tavern or an adult telling you to go buy beer for him or her. So I'm talking about craft beer right now, mainstream. We were not allowed because it's illegal here for children to be engaging with beer. But traditional craft traditional sorghum beer, I mean to say, if we were allowed, because of traditional sorghum beer is being brewed by our grandmothers. It's women in my village who brew beer. Hence, on my forum, you can see women brewing. I'm not interviewing men, I'm interviewing women. Men and women in my village have different roles. Men can go hunting, but a woman can go hunting. So a brewing traditional sorghum beer, it's a woman's job. So our grandmothers used to, you know, get us next to them and brew the beer, you know, set up the fire. We'll help them, you know, picking up the wood, and we would watch them making that traditional sorghum beer. And the aim of that is that we, when we grow up, we have to take over. They are teaching us how to make traditional sorghum beer. So even cooking, before you started, you just you take the milled sorghum, you know, you mix it with warm water together with the milled corn. You mix it with water. You ferment it. After it ferments, then you cook the porridge on the fire. You can't cook the porridge on the stove. You cook it on the fire. So we used to look forward to the cooking of the porridge because they used to, you know, pour some for us. So we would eat it with adding sugar to it, and we will look forward to that experience. So it's only after whereby the porridge is cooled and it's fermented and sieved, and they put it again to ferment, so the sugars can turn into alcohol. Then that's when by we are not allowed to go near it, because now it's alcohol. It's for the adults now. It's they serve it to men, and women can drink it also, but we don't drink it for fun. It's for important traditional purposes, like celebrating the wedding, you know, during the funeral, childbirth, you know, the guys coming from, the boys coming from initiation. That's how we use it, to celebrate and use it for important purposes like that.
So it's also not brewed constantly. It's just if you see, okay, we have a wedding in, let's say, 2 weeks or 2 months, whenever, then you prepare a beer for that wedding, and then it's consumed at that wedding. But it's not like you always have that beer at home, so like with other beers.
All right. Yes, let me explain on that. So yes, we have in the village, we have different clans. I'm part of the Tswana clan, but as other people can call it tribes. So you might find out in my family, we will brew it next month because we have a wedding. You might find out in other clans, other tribes, you know, there's a grandmother there who's looking to support the grandchildren or the children. So she would be brewing it and selling it to other people. So there's different kinds of that. So in my family, we never had somebody who would brew it and sell it. So we would brew it for special occasions, not every day. Even right now, if you go to my grandmother's house, you won't find it. So other people might be doing it for also for sales to support the children. For example, during the apartheid regime, black people were not allowed to drink mainstream beer, craft beer. So the woman in the village, now it was a must right now to brew it and sell it, because of we were only allowed to drink that.
And that also helped conserve the tradition a little bit, so that you still had your beer and your tradition and all of that?
Yes. It's a, you know, I can say it's a two-way, it's a... not a win-win situation. Let me explain on that. Yes, during apartheid, we were not, our people were not allowed to drink, you know, craft beer. But with that, it meant that our grandmothers will be brewing. They will be teaching the next generation how to brew. There was interest in learning how to brew so we can carry on the tradition. So right now, you know, there's freedom and we're not complaining. People can drink craft beer, which is good, but the youth, that's how come I made this film. The young people, over the age of 21, they're not interested in that kind of BS. Like, it's boring for them. So that's how come I started BRS Art, in order to teach, to inspire the people over the age of 21 to learn how to brew this beer. Because of when our grandmothers, they passed on, there's no one to carry on the tradition. And the next thing we're going to be complaining, and it's already happening, whereby you can go to a supermarket and buy this traditional beer from a big corporate who took our skills and our knowledge, made the beer, packaged it, and is making all the money. So that's the problem that my film showcases.
Yes, and it also showcases not only the beer and the brewing process, but also the tradition of storytelling. That was also, for me, a very fascinating part of the film. So maybe you can also introduce us a little bit into that way of storytelling and stories, and what part of your culture is that?
So it comes from the past eras, whereby also during that time of apartheid, the men who will be working in the mines, they're going to the city of Joburg, working and staying there for months. Sometimes the father of the family will be seeing the family in Christmas, during December holidays. So the whole time he's there, the only thing that he's doing is sending money home so the children, everybody can survive. So during the time, like 7 p.m., we never used to have TVs. There will be radios, yes, but not every household. So 7 p.m. was a time whereby everybody will be sitting around the fire. And it was the duty and the role of the woman to tell stories to the children, to educate the children. And we'll be sitting by the fire and listening to those stories. And those stories were not like, the normal stories. Were stories that were passed down from generation to generation. My grandmother goes the stories from her grandmother and so on and so on. So they'll be passing those traditions to us. And the stories were mostly about animals. There's a lot of things that we will learn from animals. Like even right now here in the village, 7 p.m., you will be hearing the hyenas, because of we're not very far from the game park whereby tourists can go and see those animals. So 7 o'clock was a very important time whereby they would be telling us the folks tales. So as we are growing, we've grown up right now, I have a film diploma, and you watch TV, you tend to see those stories that, our grandmothers used to tell to us. People are making films out of them. People, big companies are acquiring them. It's called acquisitions, whereby a filmmaker can go to a broadcaster with a script and say, hey, I want to make the film about this, and you get money and you make those films. Those films are our intellectual property. We're getting nothing from them. So there's an interest in our traditional African stories. And those stories are not the same. My tribe and maybe another person's tribe will not have the same stories. So they are being leaked to the big companies, and they're making money out of our stories. And those stories are very important. I need to pass them down to my children, and so forth and so forth. So they are eroding our intellectual property.
Maybe you could give us a little example of one of those stories. So what is it about, and how is the story part and the education part, how does that work together?
Okay, there's a short little story. So there's a short little story about a chicken. As I told you, the stories are about animals, but there's a great message in them. So a chicken and a falcon. A falcon is like a bird. It feeds on chicklets and other small animals. So the chicken went to the falcon to borrow a needle, the needle that you use to sew clothes, and the chicken lost the needle. So the falcon went to the chicken and said, you know what, where's my needle? I want to sew clothes for my children as well. So the chicken said, I don't have it. I can't find it. I've lost it. And that's how come today you see the falcon feasting on the the chicklets, because of it said to the chicken that, you know what, you are not giving me the needle, so to pay myself, I'll keep on eating your children until you give me back the needle. But in reality, that cannot happen. Animals cannot talk. But the great message in that is that, you know what, when somebody borrows you things, you have to take care of them. You have to return those things exactly how you found them. It's a good neighboringness, and it's a good thing to be, you know, able to take care of people's stuff.
What a nice, let's say, nice story, where it's also a big learning part. And I can remember my grandmother also told me a lot of stories, also connected with animals, of course, with more like a Christian background, but the same idea, to simply learn about your habits in life, how you can live your life in a positive way and live together with others in a good way. And all of that. And I think that is something we lose in our culture nowadays, especially in the connection with the grandmother and their parents' generations. But I also can imagine, if I think about my grandmother, she taught that to me, but she would hesitate to tell that in the public or something like that. So how hard was it to get to those people in both, so in terms of the beer and also because maybe they don't want to talk about their recipes or their way of producing beer, and also in terms of the stories, maybe they don't want to see them on screen telling them. So how do you make that and to open them?
So basically, I left my home here in the village to go to the city of Johannesburg to study filmmaking. So I've been staying there after graduating from university. I've been staying there making films, working there in the city of Joburg. So I came back home just to do the film. So I found that I was asking questions like, where is Granny so-and-so? I know there's my friend has a grandmother that I can interview. I found out most of the people have passed on. People have died in my village. So it was a very disheartening thing that most of the people, they left with their education and with the knowledge of what they can bring into this film. So I went to at the last part of the film. You see that I'm speaking to 3 grandmothers. I got them from their old age. So in the old age, they had, it's next to my house, they had 30 grandmothers, old people, 30 females. So when I went there, they told me that, you know what, these 3 grandmothers are the ones who can hold a conversation, can remember, have memory. And you can see the other grandmother, I had to repeat the question twice, because before I do filming, I asked pre-interview questions, and I had to repeat myself. It's like I never asked her questions. And it was also disheartening that, you know what, people can't remember anymore. People have passed on. So that was hard for me to get the people to be on my film. Those grandmothers, even the ones in the beginning, it was hard to get them. Their age ranged from 76 to 93. So it wasn't, but in terms of getting them to talk, it wasn't hard because of, you know, here in the village, it's a small village. We all know each other. And even the way they talk, the other one who was talking about the stories of the baboon, she kept on referencing my name. Hey, Obakeg, when I'm talking like this, I'm saying that. You can see that it's not my grandmother, by blood, but she saw me grow up. All of them saw me growing up, and I went to them. I was like, "This is Oba King. I used to come to your house to play with your grandchildren. Can you please help me out with this film?" So there's a sense of trust. There's a lot of footage that I deleted. It was not necessary for the story. It was just for fun. You know, they were telling me how I grew up. You know, the other grandmother was like, "You know, I used to come to my house and I'll be cooking food, and I'll be like, okay, Obaken, you need to go home to your house because it's getting late. And I will tell her, you know what, you need to dish up for me first. I need to taste your food before I go back home. And it was hilarious for me because I don't remember doing that. It was me as a child, maybe I was 3 years old or 5 years old, whatever. So it was a very interesting story because of they raised me. We are raised by the community here. And my grandmother is your grandmother. You know, if he sees you, being mischief in the bars, you know, making some noise, it can come there and check you and just say, you know what, sit down, you're making a noise or whatever. And you have to respect that that position because of she or he is, she's your grandmother. So that's how it works here in the village.
Can you remember when you made your first beer yourself?
Yes, it was in a brewery. So it was in a brewery. I was with the founder of Brewster's Craft, and we were making, she was teaching, we were using a small, like a grandfather, you know. So that's when we made the beer there, and it tasted good. It tasted good. But you know what, the problem with making your own beer, it's difficult for a sense that you need equipment. Beer making equipment is expensive. Starting a brewery is expensive. So also after you brew your beer, you have to find a storage, you know, a cool storage whereby the temperature is regulated for a specific style of beer you want to brew. So we brew the beer, we send it to our friends who are own breweries, you know, to keep it there so it can mature. So that was my first beer that I was a part of.
But that was like a craft beer or something like that. But did you also ready make the sorghum beer?
Yes. So the interesting part is that, you know, how old people are. You've been talking about your grandmother. You would relate. Your grandmother would not let you touch the pot, cook herbs, secret recipe or whatever, because he will tell you that, you know, you're going to mess up, you're going to fail. I don't want you next to master. I know how to brew traditional beer. I'm always with her brewing traditional beer. She'll tell me, okay, this is how you do it. I can do it by myself, but I'll never touch the pot that she's brewing. As old as she is, she's 88 years old. She will get up, sit on the chair and stir the porridge herself. Doesn't trust us near the beer. And also, even if she's old like that, 88 years old, she's still in charge of brewing the beer for our family. It's just when she passed on, then I can take the torch, or my aunts who are older than me can, you know, start brewing for the family.
Very fascinating. Let's get back to the film. So you had the idea. How did the idea for the film come? Was it because of preserving the culture and showing that, or did you have any other idea to make a film about both brewing and storytelling?
I wanted to make to showcase beer being art, the art of beer brewing, and also the art of storytelling, because I encompasses both of them. I'm a storyteller and a beer brewer. And it came from a source of concern that, you know, a lot of our tradition is being eroded, and also motivation. When you look at the film at the end, we brewed the beer using it's a pilsner, but we used sorghum. We infused sorghum in the pilsner. It was me telling the youth over the age of 21 that, okay, it's fine. Maybe you might not want to brew traditional beer, but you can infuse it into craft beer so that the tradition still lives on. So the film was inspired by that. I wanted to teach the beer industry something that they were letting it, you know, go apart, letting it, you know, go vanish without being able to see that, hey, we're focusing on this, we should be also focusing on that also. And when you I've been a part of a lot of collaboration brews. You know, America has their own style of making beer. I mean, Americans are so creative. Like, they put anything to a beer. Chocolates, muffins, I mean, are so prickled, cucumber, like everything. They can say that's their DNA in their beer. But Indians from India, they put kokum, they put chocolate nibs, they put the coffees that they take from, not coffee, the tea that they take from local farmers. So I was saying that, you know what, guys, and it's not me also alone, the other brewers are saying the same thing, that we can use sorghum and make it our DNA. We use it in other parts of our culture, like the food, you know, sorghum bread, sorghum porridge, sorghum biscuits, you know, those gluten-free biscuits. We can incorporate it into our craft beer and it can become our DNA. And a lot of breweries are doing it right now here in South Africa. They are putting sorghum into their beers. If you can go to a brewery, you can get a sorghum-infused beer. So we are taking sorghum and we infuse it into our beer. So that was their motivation to, you know, when I start my beer as art, to teach the young ones over the age of 21 that, you know what, even if you don't want to brew traditional beer because you deem it boring, whatever, but you can take the sorghum and infuse it into your beer so that, you know what, the tradition is not lost.
Yes, I think that is really the most important part. And a little bit also from my perspective, or let's say from a European perspective, or if I look at the young people, even still today, they think like Africa is one country. So they don't really understand that it's a huge continent with so many different cultures, different people from north to the south, that it's so big. And even in a country like South Africa, you don't have one beer culture. You have a lot of different, as you said, tribes and also different raw materials, different beer ideas. So maybe you can just a little bit give us an idea about your South African beer world, and maybe that could be a project for future films to also preserve the general South African beer culture.
Yes. So here in South Africa, the beer culture is growing, and it's nice to see that it's growing. We have more of a drinking culture than the beer producing culture. But right now, you know, we have breweries opening up. My friend, you know, is opening up a brewery in Bromfontein. You can go to a brewery and get a beer paired meal. We have the biggest beer festival in Pretoria, whereby people, anybody, any color, you know, black people, white people, everybody can go there and enjoy beer, meet the brewers. The most important thing is like meeting the brewers. You have like stalls there whereby there's different breweries there. They are representatives. You taste the beer, you shake hands, hug the brewers. And it's a story by itself that, you know what, now when you go to a liquor store, you see craft beer. You know the guy who makes this beer. You had a chat with the guy and he told you how he makes the beer. So it creates PR for the brewers, for the people to know the brewers so they can support, because the brewers here in South Africa, they need support. I can say they're competing with mainstream beer, and you know, the prices are a little bit more because of, you know, the ingredients and the struggles. And even for me, before starting this beer film, I took my camera, I went to the brewers, and try to know about their stories, learn their stories. And they have like pretty interesting stories. You know, the other brewer will tell you, you know what, I'm a fourth generation beer brewer. My grandfather used to make pineapple beer. So I feel the need, even though it's hard, I feel the need, you know, to carry on this tradition. The other brewer will be like, you know what, I'm twice bankrupt. You know, I had to sell my house. I had to do this and that so that I can, you know, keep this brewery running. So you get to hear stories about that. So this is what we have in South Africa. It's growing, it's big. We have beer cabs. We have also beer runs. You can go hiking. You know, brewers are very inventive here, and it's a hard job here. Like really brewing beer, if you don't have passion, you're doing it for fame. Really, you're gonna fail because of its hard work. You don't even count the hours. Being in a brewery is not glamorous. So that's what we learn here in breweries. We have brewing tours. There's, you know, and you can go to a brewing school and have talks and, you know, be a judge of the students who are brewing, who are part of the brewing beer competition.
Yes, and I experienced it myself when I was judging at the African Beer Cup. We had a lot of African brewers there also in the jury, and that was great to come to talk about their beer ideas, their beer history. And so I think your film is really a very important part of also conserving that and showing it, showcasing it. And if you are back to showcasing, you will have a screening with your film in a few weeks in Scotland. But you also had screenings already in the States and maybe somewhere else. For the screening in Scotland, we will also put all the information in the show notes so that people can come and see it together with you, which will be maybe a great experience. And also they can contact you if they cannot come to get other access to the film. So you will manage this. That's wonderful. But maybe let us a little bit, tell us a bit about the screenings you already did. So how did the people react? What was their comments afterwards? Did they get a different view on South African or African beer and beer history?
Okay, let me tell you something. You know, the screenings, they were so, I was so scared. I've been to film screenings. You know, in a film screen, everybody is a filmmaker. So they dare to watch your film. So we screened at the beer festival, Logjam, you know, beer festival in Philadelphia. That was the first screening. And we had like a big monitor by the bar, and everybody was watching. And I was there, I was so nervous. You know, the worst thing that can happen is that, you know, when people are watching film and they start looking at their phones and start having a conversation, which means it's boring. So it was good, you know. It was good, it was engaging. People watched, people learned about the film. And after that, we had a question and answer session whereby they were asking questions about the film, and they were more interested in the sorghum part, by the way. They were more interested in that because of, you know, if you put sorghum grains into your mesh tun, it can clog your mesh tun. So we were talking about the tea bag, sort of like a method whereby you put the sorghum into the sack. And it's like a tea bag, sort of. You hang the sack into your mesh tun, so it drains out the sugars, the starches, anything that, even the color from the sorghum. So you know you can't clog your equipment. So it was about that. And also we screened in New Jersey in Montclair. A very interesting part, because it was a birthday, somebody's birthday outside the brewery, where the other people came for the film. And I was expecting young people. The people who came there were old people, like senior citizens who are ready to learn. And you know, some of them are retired teachers. And it was so scary for me. I had a train to catch from Montclair and New Jersey to go back to New York. I nearly missed my train because of, I wanted to give them everything that I had. You know, you can ask questions. You can ask everything that you needed to know. People are interested to know and the beer they drinking, what goes into their beer. So I've learned that, you know, my film attracted, I was expecting young people, but I got old people who are concerned like me that we're losing our tradition, we're losing our, you know, our skills, and people are not valuing the art of information. So that's what happened in Montclair. We also had the film screening in some couple of clubs in the U and the USA, especially during the 4th of July. Yeah, we had some couple of clubs, you know, screenings and stuff like that. You know, I had to get people interested in the film. That was my role, to keep them engaged, to answer every question that I can answer. You know, yeah, it's hard converting a beer brewer or somebody who just came to the bar to drink beer, and you're just making that person watch the beer film. So I've learned, there's a couple of things that I've learned. I've learned that, you know, I have to have a cult following. I need to bring the people into the club or into whichever tavern or bar so they can watch film. I have to attract interest and maintain interest, have a little cult going on. Because of, for me, how I view beer, beer is not like just us going there, drinking, having dancing. There's more to beer. There's education. There's, you know, being social. It's a gathering. It's a group of us, you know, beer nerds and you know, having time to chill with each other, share knowledge, share anything that we can share with each other. You know, I view it as, you know, the people who go to, there are people who can go to a grocery store and buy art, but there are people also, people who can go to an art gallery, buy those expensive art. We are creating those kind of people, people who can go to brewers and not care about the prices. Support brewers by any form possible. If they say we're having a beer yoga, we have a beer film screening at the breweries, that cult following, those guys must go there and support so we can grow this industry.
I really like the picture you're drawing. That's a fantastic comparison to say we have. It's like going to an art gallery and enjoy that art. And that's really, I will keep that if I may. that's a good thing. I can reuse that really good. And now you're doing that screening in Scotland. How did that come?
You know, I met Amelie. She's the founder of Women in Beer. So what they're doing, they support women through their beer journey. Whatever idea that you want, you know, they support breweries, they support any form of beer-related upliftment movement. So I pitched to her. We had a virtual meeting before I went to the USA. So also going to the USA was, you know, proven to her, you know, this thing can happen. Because when I approached her, it was just another idea. So she just saw, okay, fine, the film is done. Look what she's doing in the USA. So, you know, we can work together. So we're trying to get into the space of Europe, because Europe is an already, you know, market for beer. It's I don't need to convince you anything about beer. You are already a client for beer related stuff. People go to breweries to smell the beer, taste the beer, you know, talk about the aromas, the flavors and everything, and meet the brewers. So it's a good market for us to go there and teach about how we make a beer, our beer. Maybe a collaboration brew might come up from Europe. And also, again, talking about German, I know this podcast, it's a German podcast. I did quote something that is related to Germany in the film, whereby I was talking about, you know, inducing secondary fermentation into the beer, whereby the process whereby after the beer has finished it's fermenting, my grandmother pour new batch of fermented sorghum to induce secondary fermentation. So basically what happens in the beer industry, let's say your beer is fermenting, it's coming out a little bit flat, you're not happy with the fermentation. So you can bring like the malt to the picture, whereby now you can, you know, give it a boost. So that's the part. That's what I've learned from German brewers. Just from now, I forgot the names, but I'm going to send you on email on what the process is called.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the most important thing, to bring the real world together and have all these different ideas which develop in all the different countries and regions and people. And we mix a lot and we try new things, and that's to be creative and innovative. And yeah. And so I think that's also an important part about your film, because it's like a conservation of the state in which is the brewing, the historical or traditional brewing now in your country or in your area, and also to see how the people live it, how they do it, how they talk about it, to see their passion. That is also a great part of the film. So I can only invite all the listeners, if you have the chance, any to really come to the screenings and contact you and talk about that, because it's such an important and interesting part of beer and beer history, especially in Africa. So maybe you're looking forward to have some screenings in Germany. Maybe we find an idea. That's really an interesting thing. Do you already have other future projects where you're thinking about the next beer film or film in general will be about this or that and something like that?
Yes, for now I'm still on the beer film, because of our aim is to turn, you know, beer drinkers into sort of like beer snobs. You know, we try to create a cult, and we try to, you know, when you look at on TV, beer has a bad name, you know, and understandably, you know, some people did some stuff, like for example in communities whereby people are poor, they tend to abuse beer. So our aim is to also to get those communities to be empowered by beer, meaning that, you know what, you can, if we take the people who are unemployed, teach them the skills of making beer, now they can go home, they can get jobs in the beer industry and get to uplift their families. So that's also another aim with what we're doing. So now my next film is beer entrepreneurship. Now our first film was beer art, showing you the art of brewing. So now we are showing you how you can make beer your career. We have a problem here in South Africa whereby people graduate from college and they don't have jobs. People, they have like diplomas, PhDs in whatever section of education that they chose. They are sitting at home right now, not having jobs. We have a job crisis here in South Africa. But we want us as beers art, we want those people to come to a beer industry. Imagine for example, you did logistics at schools. So if we bring you to the beer industry, we teach you how to make beer. Maybe you might not want to make beer, but you take your skills of logistics and you know, transport beer from breweries to warehouses or from breweries to bars. So which means now you're implementing what you've learned from school, and you, with that talent, you investing it in the beer industry, because of the for the beer industry to grow, we need people to be in here. It's a small industry whereby it's just we all know each other. For us to grow is for people to come in here with great ideas, motivation, and people are ready to make a change for the better for the beer industry. We can't get to the state whereby you know, I'm America has 10,000, over 10,000 breweries and beer places. We want to get to that space. How are we going to get to that space if we are not opening the doors to other people? So that is also an idea of mine.
Yeah, and that sounds wonderful. And for me, it's not only passion, it's also a mission you just were telling about. And I really wish you all the best for that. And as I said, we will put every information in the show notes so people can come to the screenings, people can contact you. And I'm really looking forward to meeting you, maybe to have a screening somewhere here on the continent, maybe here in Germany, and also to watch your next film, where already the idea is really getting me on. And thank you for your great work, for your passion, for what you're doing for the beer industry and for the women in beer, for the tradition in beer, for African beer. So yeah, thanks for that. And thanks for the time. And just a shout out to all of the listeners. Come to Oberkämming's screening, watch the film, and come back to her. And yeah, spread the word, spread the information, and enjoy African beer. So thanks for today, and I'm looking forward to meeting you soon.
Yes, and one final word for context, the listener who's been listening, is that, you know what, after this learning about beer brewing, I found that beer is art. Beer is art aims to teach the youth over the age of 21 the skills of beer brewing, beer podcast, licensing, starting their own breweries and starting their own beer brands. Hence, I was referencing it in the film that all the mission of everything that I come there, I was talking about the inspiration come from beer as art.
Beer Talk, der Podcast rund ums Bier. Alle Folgen unter www.biertalk.de.